I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a man accused in what detectives called the worst torture case they've ever seen turned out to be an illegal alien. Plus, new disturbing details on the sexually violent predator released into the Enumclaw community. Plus, a missing girl turned 17 while SCOTUS is set to hear the case about the political maneuvers that led to her vanishing. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. You probably remember this story from April. It was all over the news. We didn't cover it on our show because we don't really cover just regular crime things unless there's some sort of broader political issue, for instance. This was the headline from Fox 13 in April. Renton, Washington man charged in gruesome torture and domestic abuse case. And the details of this case are and were horrific, as this individual, Vipindeep Singh, is awaiting trial. According to prosecutors in the court documents, the defendant has committed some of the most horrific atrocities that can be committed in private, has isolated her, the victim, psychologically manipulated her, and left physical scars and injuries that will never heal. His actions were deliberately cruel and served no other purpose than to engage in gratuitous violence and inflict an unfathomable amount of pain on his victim. I mean, I've seen pictures in the documents, which I wouldn't show you, of what this guy did to the woman who he was with. But he right now is awaiting trial on multiple counts, assault in the first degree. I mean, this is some of the largest charging longest charging documents, assault in the second degree. These are for individual incidents, assault in the second degree, another case of cruelty, assault in the second degree, yet another count, assault in the second degree, count five, assault in the second degree, count six, pages and pages of charges by the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office against this guy. So that was, like I said, on the news. And then I saw my friend David Rose at Fox 13, who's one of the only sane, honest journalists left in Seattle. And I don't know if it'll cost him his job for saying this, because the media never does, but he posted that he found out that this guy is an illegal alien. Not only is he an illegal alien, he came into our country via the southern border through California during the Biden administration. This is what ICE sent us in confirmation. ICE filed a detainer on Vipindeep Singh, an illegal alien from India, with the King County Malang Regional Justice Center on July 14th, 2026. He entered the United States illegally in 2022 at or near Calexico, California, and is currently in removal proceedings. So here you have this guy, came into the United States under open borders Biden, immediately came to the sanctuary state of Washington, which, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you go to a sanctuary state where not only are they going to try to protect you and shield you from deportation, they'll give you a driver's license. Hell, if you're really dishonest, you can even register to vote. You can get connected to social services. You get treated just like a citizen of the United States in Washington state. Came here, and under the cover of our sanctuary policies, tortured a woman. Worst case of torture the detectives said they had ever seen. Controlled her movements, wouldn't let her leave, wouldn't let her breathe without his say-so. Came across the border, came up to Washington state, committed one of the worst acts of torture detectives and prosecutors had ever seen. And he's in the country illegally. Now, I wonder what will happen with this. Because ICE, you know, if they find out that someone's illegal, they can lodge a detainer. They can say to the jail, hey, give us a heads up if he posts bail. Give us a heads up if, you know, once he's convicted, how long his sentence is going to be. But that doesn't mean the state of Washington is going to cooperate with that. And this sort of stuff, you guys, happens all the time. The number of child rapists, the number of murderers, the number of individuals who have been in the grasp of the criminal justice system, and because of our stupid nonsense sanctuary policies. Our state won't go the extra step of saying, hey, we got this guy here. He's violent. He's abusive. He committed an act of torture or whatever it might be, and say, once we're done with him, you take him. They won't do it because virtue signaling comes above all else. And I saw this and I asked Bob Ferguson, you happy yet? Is this what our sanctuary laws are supposed to do? Is this who you want our sanctuary laws protecting? And they do protect him. They do protect him. The open border policies under Biden allowed him to come here from India. And these people, the concentration of these illegals in states where they can get anything they please and be treated like any other person, and they can commit crimes and not be reported to ICE, of course they're going to come here. You keep telling us that the sanctuary policies are so victims can call 911 and not be worry about being deported. So that witnesses can call 911 and cooperate with police and report a crime that's happening and not worry about being deported. And I don't think that there's a person on the planet who would disagree with the notion that if you're the victim of a crime and you call police and something's happening to you and you need help, that we want our local police heading there and also saying, but are you illegal? And none of them are going to do that. That's not a thing that's happening. But if you have someone who calls 911, like the victim of a crime like this, being tortured by their significant other, and they say, and he's in the country illegally, one of the very first freaking calls that the local police should make is to ICE and enforcement removal operations so they can go in on it together and figure out how they can get this guy the hell out of our state and the hell out of our country. And the media, you think anybody besides David Rose in the mainstream news? And I guarantee, I should ask my friend David, I bet he gets in trouble for that. Because they never report on it. In the headline, he's still referred to as a Renton Waugh man. Not a Renton man. He's an illegal alien from India. And you still look at the story on Fox 13, and, you know, I would say the journalist should update the old story, right? They're not going to update that thing. No, you're going to Google this guy's name, follow this story, and you look at all the media coverage, even now that it's known that 5 days ago, ICE lodged a detainer against this guy. And he's committed unspeakable acts of cruelty. You think that the mainstream media coverage moving forward in this case, when he goes to trial, when he's convicted, when he's sent to prison, do you think they'll mention the fact that he's an illegal alien from India and ICE has lodged a detainer against him? Of course they're not going to, because they don't care about public safety. The same reason when it's a homeless person who tears a girl away from a bus stop and rapes her in the woods. The same reason the Seattle Times leaves off the fact that he's a homeless drug addict. Virtue signaling above all else. Virtue signaling used to be left to the politicians, but now the media joins them in their virtue signaling as well. And that is de facto lying to you. That is de facto lying to the public. And it does make the public less safe. So the media makes the public less safe by hiding the truth from them about the violent illegals, about the violent homeless drug addicts, because, oh, we can't label them. It's about their actions, not the label. Can never put a label on them. Absolutely outrageous. So there you have it. Worst case of torture the detectives have ever seen. Vipindeep Singh. 6 counts with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. Illegal alien from India. Thanks, Joe Biden. Thanks to the auto pen. All right. Another story we wanted to follow up on today, because it has developed significantly over the weekend. We broke news of this on Thursday. And there were some things about it that just really stood out to us. I mean, there are violent sexual predators who are released into communities all the time. That is not an unusual thing. But the nature of this man's case and the fact that the public hadn't been notified about his placement in Enumclaw did seem disturbing to us. So we told you about him on Thursday. His name is Robert Eugene Lau. He is a level 3 sex offender. He was officially released from the Special Commitment Center on July 9th, 2026. And in that release in the database, it said there will be an online meeting about Lau, details on the King County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. OK, so, you know, sort of like one of the things that set off an alarm bell to the citizen who noticed this is they saw this. They saw that he had been released days prior into Enumclaw, and they hadn't seen any sort of notice on the King County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. There hadn't been any sort of community meeting about this guy. And for anyone who knows how sex offenders are labeled, the fact that he's a level 3 registered sex offender was like, well, this is a really bad dude. This is a really sick dude. And this is a dangerous guy. He's level 3, Indian Claw. He was in this special commitment center, which means he was worst of the worst. And they're saying they're going to have a community meeting about him, but nothing like that has happened. And then we learned the nature of his crime, which was incredibly disturbing. In 1986, he was convicted of first-degree rape and attempted murder of a young woman he picked up in a tavern and left to die on the side of the road after stabbing her repeatedly through her vagina. He was sentenced to 30 years in prison. And then when he was about to get released from prison in 2009, they committed him to Sex Offender Island as a sexually violent predator, which is a special civil designation that we have in Washington State. Probably one of the only things we've done correct on crime, where we say, hey, this sexually violent predator served their prison sentence. But doctors tell us they have, you know, they're sick and twisted. They've got a propensity for this kind of activity. They are not rehabilitated. It's very likely they're going to commit another offense. So we're not letting them back into the community. We're throwing them on a freaking island, and they're going to stay there until they're rehabilitated or no longer a danger in this fashion to the community. So a couple things, a couple updates to this. We do this story on Thursday. I also happen to know that after we did the story on Thursday, Fox 13 was also requesting some of the same information. So I believe that they also did a story on Thursday or Friday. So now all of a sudden, this guy's release into Enum Claw is public. And what happens 3 days ago, July 17th, Friday, one day after we did the story, King County Sheriff's Office posts on their Facebook page. And mind you, we reached out to them on Thursday. Like, hey, are you guys gonna, it says you're having a public meeting about this, but we don't see anything. 1 day later, they're on their Facebook page. The King County Sheriff's Office will hold a virtual community meeting about the recent release of sex offender Robert Lau to the Enum Claw area on Thursday, July 23rd from 7 to 8:30 p.m. So this Thursday, they're finally gonna have a meeting about this guy. Too little, too late, in my opinion, because the time to notify a community about the release of a sexually violent predator with that kind of offense, spent 30 years in prison and like 15 years on the sex predator island. The time to brief the public about that is before you put him there. Can we all agree on that? Is that like the least you can do? The time to brief the public instead of meeting to brief the public is not, you know, the day after we cover the story and ask the King County Sheriff's Office for comment. Now, this gets even worse because one of the questions we had, and we were busy just trying to get documents, and we didn't want to hold the story on Thursday because I feel like people deserve to know that this guy's in their community, and clearly the government hadn't told them. So we're like, let's do the story, let people know he's out there, and we'll continue to search for get the documents and request the documents we need to understand why he was released from the civil commitment center when he was, right? So shortly after our show on Thursday, we end up getting the documents about this guy. And it gets even worse. And mind you, we made the correct decision to run with the story on Thursday before having those documents because I had text messages from people saying, oh my God, this guy lives on my street. Oh my God, this guy lives in my neighborhood. Thank you for letting me know. So now they know, right? Meeting on Thursday. The documents we got show at length this guy's history that goes way beyond the attempted murder and rape and stabbing a woman in the vagina that he served prison time for. That was the crime in question. And so we're reading this history. And I remember on Thursday, Nicole's sitting there reading to me and she's like, eyes wide open, like, oh my God. This guy has been a sexual predator his whole life. And so as we're reading this, we're becoming increasingly like, how did he get off this island? So just a couple of the things in his history. And not all of these were convictions, but as part of the process for civilly committing someone, you know, they talk to people who say they were victims from his past, family members, exes, all of these things to get a complete understanding of his propensity to commit a violent sex offense. So he's accused of molesting an underage neighbor. This is from long ago in his history. His sister accused him of sexually abusing her and peeping, like while she was changing and stuff like that. So going back to his younger years, this guy was committing sex crimes. His ex-wife accused him of rape. So he had all of that before this incident where he took this woman from the tavern, raped her, stabbed her in the vagina, and ditched her on the side of the road. But you could argue that by that time, you know, there was a lot of indicators that this guy was a sexually violent predator. All of these things. Then he gets in prison. He wasn't a model inmate in prison. He's accused of attacking fellow inmates. He instigated, according to the write-up, he instigated assaults on staff and recruited security threat group members to assault them. What's a security threat group? It's an STG. An STG in a prison is a prison gang. So this could be a Mexican prison gang. It could be a white supremacist prison gang. You name it. Every prison in the state has STGs. So he was recruiting them to assault and threaten staff members. He wrote the following on a t-shirt while in prison. Sock a cop, I'll give you $100. Stab a cop, I'll give you $1,000. Stab Lieutenant Gleason specifically, I'll give you $5,000. Stab Lieutenant Andring specifically, I'll give you $5,000. He was also tampering with locks in the prison. He fought with another inmate. He was also found, and this is the killer, he was found in possession of sexually explicit material. Okay, more on that in a moment. And he just was all around this whole time he's been in prison. I mean, he's paying gang members in prison and putting a bounty on the head of security officials in the prison, of guards. And he also was found with child sex abuse material in prison. He had a phone. So that means he smuggled it in, right? It had child porn on it. Okay? This isn't even that long ago. He had a phone with child porn on it. And he still got out of the special commitment center and got placed in an Enumclaw community, totally unbeknownst to them. So I'm looking at that whole history, right? Because I know fairly well the process by which, you know, the state of Washington decides, are we going to petition to civilly commit someone? You know, it involves psychobabble and therapists and stuff. And then look, I've said a million times, you can't just strip even a guy like this, Robert Eugene Lau, of his constitutional rights. This is America. No matter how bad you are, you still have constitutional rights. So you can't just say, you committed this offense, we're going to put you behind lock and key for the rest of your life. So you can petition at a certain point every single year to get off the special commitment center and to be placed in a less restrictive alternative or just to be released unconditionally into the community. So he has a right to do that. And so the state of Washington basically has to, you know, have a third party psychiatrist evaluate him. And that psychiatrist will tell the judge, essentially, in this case, the prosecuting attorney's office is also involved. They'll tell the judge either, yes, this person continues to be a sexually violent predator and they are at great risk of committing a sexually violent offense, or they say they're not. And you can't argue with them. You can't go, well, like, I don't like what this expert said. I'm going to go find another one. No, because that's expert shopping. Same way you can't judge shop. And so they just have this one, and this is what we found out. How the hell is this guy out in the streets? Given all that history, right? All the way through his confinement. Well, they find one of these therapists from California who comes in, looks at all that history, and decides, he doesn't continue to meet the definition of a sexually violent predator. I'll read you a little bit from the summary. It says, in summary, Mr. Lowe scored in the average to above average range for risk range of risk for sexual reoffense. On the static instruments, it's just a lot of jargon, but you get it. He has a high density of criminogenic need factors, blah, blah, blah. Taking all this into consideration, it is my opinion Mr. Lau does not pose a more likely than not risk for committing predatory acts of sexual violence. Does not pose a more likely than not risk. Keep in mind now, when she's saying this, while serving his time, they found him with a phone with child sex abuse material. And you have this psychiatrist who's saying he does not pose a more likely than not risk for committing predatory acts? How the hell could you come to this conclusion? Now, she says in here, I do wish to emphasize this evaluation considered two very specific and limited questions. First, is Mr. Lau predisposed to committing criminal sexual acts as a result of a mental abnormality or personality disorder? And second, does he pose a more likely than not risk to commit future predatory sexually violent offenses? It does not address his likelihood of committing offenses not defined by the law as sexually violent, okay? There's the key. So it sounds like this psychiatrist is basically saying, like, he's a dangerous dude. He could commit other violent acts, but I cannot tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's more likely than not to commit a sexually violent act as defined under state law. You know what's not classified as a sexually violent act? Possessing child pornography. You know what's not considered and classified as a sexually violent act? Hiring gang members in prison to murder prison guards. So in a way, it's really not the psychiatrist's fault. The standard to continue to keep someone civilly committed on the pedophile island is that high. Now, I believe in constitutional rights, and I'm not a licensed psychiatrist. But when you have that kind of history, going back to your childhood, accused of molesting an underage neighbor, accused of molesting your sister, accused of peeping on your sister, accused of raping your ex-wife, took a woman from a bar, raped her, stabbed her in the vagina, left her on the side of the road, and then you're in prison, doing your time, 30 years hard, 15 years on the pedophile island, and you still smuggle in a cell phone so you can look at depictions of sexually explicit depictions of minors. Like, to me, I'm like, that's a sexually violent predator. Like, let's keep that guy locked up. But the laws of the state of Washington and how this worked decided, nope. Not only are we not going to keep him locked up, we're going to drop him in the middle of Enum Claw and we're not going to tell anybody about it. Forgive my language, but it calls for it. That's disturbing. Kids nearby. Can you imagine having a family? Even being a woman, even being an adult woman. Those were his victims. So we do know that there is a possibility that he could still be charged or that there's some sort of investigation ongoing into his alleged possession of child sex abuse material. But that makes it even crazier, doesn't it? Wait. So you're telling me you've got an open case on the guy for child sex abuse material in prison, but you're still going to let him go into the community and not tell anybody about it? That is wild. So if you're an Enum Claw, I know you've already fought on this issue before of these predators being released into your community without notification, and politicians are like, we'll do better next time. They're not going to do better. They don't care. And I don't think they'd be having one of these community meetings had we not broke the story on Thursday. Absolutely outrageous. All right, coming up next, we promised you we'd cover the state Supreme Court races. You'll probably be getting your ballots in the mail. I'm curious if you guys already have. We didn't yet. We got our voter guide, but I haven't gotten my ballot yet. But I'm excited. I love getting my ballot in the mail. First, could the market's biggest blind spots be putting your retirement portfolio at risk? I've said over and over, we get second opinions on all sorts of things. Why not get a second opinion on the strength of your retirement portfolio, especially given sort of the state of the economy, what's happening in the tech sector because of AI, and of course, what's happening in the Middle East. So our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, he is having one of his free live webinars this Thursday. His Market Blind Spot webinar is happening July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, totally free to sign up. Just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. A little thing will pop up and say, you want to join the webinar? And you can sign up there. It'll be live on Thursday. It's free. You can also subscribe to Zach's daily podcast on YouTube. And while you're at knowyourriskpodcast.com, you can find out how to follow him across all his social media platforms. And he was on a little bit of vacation, but he'll be back with me this week for some new episodes of Swamp Watch. So I'm looking forward to that. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com, KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, probably the most important races on your ballot in November are going to be the races for state Supreme Court in Washington. Why? Well, this, first of all these issues we care so much about, ultimately, as they're challenged, you know, it's really the state Supreme Court that can have the final say on them. So income tax, I mean, even if, you know, even when, let me be positive, even when voters say yes in November to repeal the income tax, say yes in November to protect girls' sports, and say yes in November to restore parental rights, even when that happens, you already know the game. Democrats don't take no for an answer. And they're more than happy to boop, overturn the will of voters because they have a state Supreme Court that's been on their side. They have a state Supreme Court that upheld capital gains, despite the fact they had to basically rewrite definitions of tax code in order to do it. There are 5 seats in the state Supreme Court that are going to be on the ballot in November. And I'm not a mathematician, but that is, of 9, the majority. So you can literally elect a new majority to the state Supreme Court. It's huge. And for that reason, a lot of money is going into these races. And you've probably already seen the ads. I was sitting there. I'm just minding my own business. I'm trying to watch my trashy TLC shows. And then I see Bob Ferguson pop up on my screen. I'm like, ha! And he's, you know, pitching some Supreme Court person. And I was like, oh my gosh, I hope the other sides can spend some money here. So I'm going to give you some recommendations in these races. And I also think the first thing I do is, who does the Stranger endorse? Who does the Northwest Progressive Institute endorse? And who does Bob Ferguson endorse? Because, of course, they know that this is the Supreme Court that's going to decide eventually on the income tax. And so what they're doing is trying to install people who will somehow interpret the state constitution to say, yeah, income taxes are totally great. Not at all explicitly banned the way that we have them in the state constitution. So there's only going to be, one quick note, there's only going to be 4 races on the August primary. So if you're confused, it's because one of the races only has 2 people. So that'll just go straight to November. So the other ones that have more than 2 candidates, they will be on your August ballot. So there's going to be 4 on the August ballot. There'll be 5 on the November ballot. Okay, so in Supreme Court position 1, Colleen Melody is Bob Ferguson's hand-picked selection. He picked her to fill a vacancy, and now he's supporting her to keep the job full-time. That should tell you off the bat, that is not your person. I mean, I think it's weird when politicians, this is supposed to be a separate branch of government. And so when you have the governor on TV cheering on Supreme Court candidates, that's chilling to me, because what they want is a rubber stamp. They don't want a separate equal branch of government. So in this one, I would say either Kolberg or Edwards. Laura Kolberg or Scott Edwards, those would be good picks. Now, to be clear, as I go through these, some of this for me is process of elimination. I know I don't want Colleen Melody because the governor wants her and thinks that she is going to rule his way on the income tax. And I believe he has reason to think that. The trouble is that these justices, even as they're campaigning for the job, or these candidates for justice, even as they're campaigning for the job, they cannot tell you, they shouldn't tell you, how they would rule on the income tax. They can't say anything about something that might come before them in the future, imminently. And so part of it's like, you know, looking at their history, having to read through the lines about, you know, how they interpret the Constitution, how beholden they are to it, and all these things. So just really quickly on that one again, if you could put it back up. Supreme Court position 1, as you get your ballots, either Kolberg or Edwards. Kolberg or Edwards. I mean, if those two move through, that would be just phenomenal. Okay, Supreme Court position 3. So you have Jamie Hawk, David Stevens, and J. Michael Diaz. David Stevens. Of the two, the Hawk and Diaz, they're being supported by the uber progressives. So the only option here is David Stevens. And I don't know if you saw it. Did you find that Hawk thing we were looking for? No, that's okay. Maybe we'll show it tomorrow. So that this was the ad that I saw pop up while I was trying to mind my own business and watch trash TV over the weekend. It was for Jamie Hawk. Okay. And it was Bob Ferguson and Pramila Jayapal. And they're doing, you know, the awkward thing you do in political ads where you walk and talk and it just looks weird, right? And so they're doing their own separate thing. And then Bob Ferguson stops and he's like, oh, what does he say? Judge. And then Pramila Jayapal's over here and she's like, Hawk. And he's like, Judge. And she's like, Hawk. And they go back and forth like the Seahawks chant. So they're trying to, I was mortified. I was like, that is one of the more embarrassing political ads I've ever seen. But maybe they're hoping it sticks in people's heads, like, oh, hawk, like Seahawk. And that's how people decide who to vote for the most power, one of the most powerful positions in the state. No, you're going to vote. Well, vote how you want. I'm not here to tell you how to vote. I'm going to vote for David Stevens. All right. Supreme Court position five. Supreme Court position five. So remember, Theo Angelus is the installed choice by the governor. So absolutely, under no circumstances will I be voting for Theo Angelus. You might recognize the name Dave Larson. And that's because Dave Larson, last election, narrowly lost a race for Supreme Court. And this is one of those things that infuriates me, because had more people voted, like, I want to say there was a huge discrepancy between the number of votes that, like, the governor's position got and all of those things. And so people just leave these off. They don't even fill it in on the ballot because they're not familiar with it. And so that is just not an excuse with so much at stake. So Dave Larson is the obvious choice for me for Supreme Court position five. All right, the last one that'll be on the August ballot, and you'll have all of these no matter where you are in the state, obviously. So judge position seven. There's a couple options here that I think would be the better options, and that would be Todd Bloom and Kareem Merchant. Todd Bloom and Kareem Merchant. So those are my choices, who I'm going to vote for of the two of them. I'm not entirely sure. I'll figure that out before my ballot arrives. I know back in the judge position one, I gave you both Kolberg and Edwards. So, you know, I think just do your own research on those. But those are my thoughts. And when in doubt, go see who the stranger is endorsing and just choose someone else, right? It's always a good option. All right, we'll talk about more of those races that are going to be on your primary ballot as that day closes in. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, this is a heavy one. 8 months. 8 months, Eleanor has now been missing from a perfectly loving family. It was her 17th birthday over the weekend. So if you're not familiar with this case, Eleanor ran away from home, was a student in the Puyallup School District, and was basically indoctrinated in radical gender ideology. Eleanor was convinced by someone that she was in fact Elliot. All of this was kept secret by the Puyallup School District. Secrets were kept from Eleanor's loving parents, and that is state law. They don't tell you anything. If your kid wants to go to school and they want to be a different name or a different gender, they're not going to tell parents. So all this was happening. Eleanor's mental health was getting worse as a result. They even connected Eleanor with outside resources, like the Oasis Youth Center, taxpayer-funded, where they further indoctrinated her. And Oasis Youth Center connected her with her own attorney, who was able to get her temporarily placed with some chick that she met out on the streets, like a homeless outreach advocate. And so Eleanor, because some sick adult convinced Eleanor that she was transgender and wanted to be Elliot, Eleanor ran away from home. The state, under Senate Bill 5599, which I warned is the most dangerous bill I'd ever seen, they said, if you run away from home and it's because you're got some gender thing, then we're not going to tell your parents where you are. So months have gone by, month after month after month, and Eleanor's family has no idea if she's alive or dead. They just know that this weekend was her 17th birthday. And I will tell you, you know, based on all the resources that we know the state of Washington and the school district connected Eleanor to, they do believe she's probably in the Olympia area, but I know the state knows where she is. You don't think, as a now 17-year-old, 16 to 17-year-old, that she's had some continued contact with Team Child, with the Oasis Youth Center, with some sort of state bureaucrat getting whatever sort of services? Of course she has. So imagine this. The state of Washington absolutely knows where Eleanor Holman is. But 8 months have gone by with her family worried sick, not knowing, is she living on the streets? Where is she staying? Is she eating? What is happening? Is she even alive? But that is the law in Washington. By law, the state can keep that secret from parents. No obligation to even call and say, hey, she's okay. We're not going to tell you where she is. But, you know, she was in this place today. And as you know, this is actually the subject of a case that the United States Supreme Court is going to hear this coming term. And part of it is thanks to the reporting that we've done on Eleanor and her wonderful mom, Jody, you know, making this story public. So SCOTUS agreed to take a legal challenge, International Partners for Ethical Care versus Robert Ferguson, on 5599. And so they will decide whether government-sanctioned disappearing of children is acceptable. And I believe the Supreme Court will say, no, it's not. The government cannot hide a child from their parents because that child thinks they're transgender. I mean, so this nightmare, right, for Eleanor and for the Holmans and for these other families, eventually there is an end to this in terms of the Supreme Court telling Washington State, you can't do that. But how much damage will be done in the meantime? Will Eleanor even be alive for all these other kids? You know, what is how much damage can be done to a child's life in the course of a year while we wait for the Supreme Court to hear this case and to make a decision? Jody Holman texted both Nicole and I over the weekend just letting us know, hey, you know, we're still looking for Eleanor. She turned 17 years old this weekend. I asked for permission to share part of her message to us with you, and she said that was fine. She said, today is Eleanor's 17th birthday. It's difficult to believe another birthday has come while she is still missing. She has now been gone since November, and we still have no solid leads. Birthdays have a way of reminding us of everything we're missing. David and I continue to hope someone somewhere has the information needed to bring her home. Imagine a mom going through that because of the government. There were no findings of abuse, nothing like that. This is about radical gender ideology in the state of Washington saying, you can't be trusted to raise a trans child. You can't be trusted to give this child the support they need. We'll give her the support she needs, he needs, as Elliot. And the other thing is, even if they do find her, how much brainwashing and indoctrination has occurred in the last 8 months? Where their daughter has been, her mind has been poisoned against them. It is the saddest thing to sit here and think about. And it is a blessing that SCOTUS is taking this case. Because they will decide the right way. I am sure of it. They will side with parents. But it is tragic that this even has to happen. And I'll tell you what, if one day the state of Washington and voters here get their you-know-what together and put other people in office and have some semblance of normalcy and balance, the people who did this have to pay for it. The people who did this, their political careers should be over. The people who advocated for it and the people who didn't say anything about it. It's one of the more disgusting things we've ever covered on this show. Heartbreaking. All right, speaking of Oregon pumping children full of hormones, the startling statistics about how many girls in the state of Oregon are receiving gender-affirming care. We'll have that. First, if you and your family are looking for ways to save money, a place you might not think of looking is your insurance. You might be with like, oh gosh, my Uncle Bob so-and-so, he's done our insurance for 10 years. We can't possibly ditch him. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. You know what? You tell Bob, I took the First Mark Challenge. They're saving me thousands. If you can't do that, I'm gone, buddy. You've already given Uncle Bob enough of your loyalty. You know what I mean? Sometimes it can sound like a pain, like, oh my gosh, we have so many insurance plans and policies. I don't want to go through the process of having a new company. Let me tell you, First Mark Insurance makes it so damn easy. You have a short phone call with them, go over your current insurance. They go out, they do all the work for you. They go out to a large market of carriers. They're not just working for one insurance company, and they come back with their recommendations. And I think, you know, for all of us, you watching and us, we work hard. I don't think we got any socialist types just cruising off the taxpayer teat. So we work hard for everything we have. We're planning for a future. We've got plans and things we want to do. And so you want to make sure that you're properly protected. It's not just about like getting the cheapest insurance you can find. No, you want good insurance at a good price. That's what Firstmark Insurance specializes in. They saved Mike and I $2,000 this year on our renewals, and we weren't even expecting it. We're like, wow, that's a nice surprise. I'm wondering what I'm going to put that money toward. Maybe a nice trip to Florida. Anyway, you could be our next Firstmark Challenge victory. They've had over 11,000 of them. You could be next. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start literally tomorrow. Firstmarkinsurance.com. All right. One in 65 Oregon girls have been diagnosed as transgender. This is from data. There was an article about it in the Wall Street Journal, an opinion piece. Oregon is pumping children full of hormones. The state pushes teens toward transgender-related diagnoses and dangerous treatments. And as I'm reading this, the same applies to Washington. The same applies to California. The statistics might not be an exact reflection, but we've talked about this. Like 500% increases in the number of kids identifying as gender diverse in schools and stuff. So this is just outrageous. So Leo Sapir is one of the people who wrote this opinion piece. He said, in Oregon, one in 65 girls received a transgender-related clinical diagnosis between 2016 and 2023. One in 240 girls received hormones. Kids in Oregon were almost 20 times more likely than kids in Mississippi to have a gender dysphoria diagnosis. He says, how did this happen? And we know how it happened. The normalization of this. This is peer pressure, essentially. This is kids deciding, oh, I can get special treatment, special attention, be looked upon as special and interesting and unique if I am transgender. And the adults around them in the public school system, adults on the internet, as we'll find out tomorrow in a story we're doing, they'll encourage it. This is cool. This is special. I was reminded of that. I can't remember what school it was, but they showed this video. Do you remember it? We talked about it on the show with like some video from the internet, but it was shown in a public school in Washington where it was like a family teaching the old grandpa about how genders are different than when you, and they compared it to a salad. And he's like, in my day, a salad was just a crusty old piece of iceberg lettuce and some, you know, whatever. And now a salad, they said, oh, it has avocado and shishito peppers and it's spicy and cool. So it's like, you can either be the dried up piece of iceberg lettuce or you can be, oh, shishito peppers and avocados. So it's just sick the way that they twist these kids' mind. And every kid wants to feel special. Every kid wants to feel unique. Every kid wants extra attention. And these psychotic adults are just giving it to them. And then these psychotic medical institutions are saying, yep, fast track them, fast track them, fast track them. We dealt with that in Washington State with Tamara Pitsky, the whistleblower, who was a psychologist, a psychiatrist at a gender clinic, Mary Bridge Children's Hospital. And they wouldn't let her actually sit there and diagnose the kids with the trauma that they've had and, you know, what else is going on here that might lead you to believe that you're not the gender that you are, et cetera. They're like, you can't do that. Just send them to the gender clinic. Just sign off on it. So this is like, no, we're not questioning what these kids say. They come in, they tell us they're a kitty cat, send them to the gender clinic, send them to the gender clinic. That's what they do because you can never question it. So that's not a surprise in Oregon. City Journal posted a little bit more about the data. It says, using insurance data for minors ages 8 to 17 between 2016 and 2023, the authors of the recent Research Connection study found that about 1 in 240 girls, 1 in 630 boys in Oregon were on hormones by the age of 17. In addition, 0.98% of minors, 1.51% of girls and 0.46% of boys received a transgender-related diagnosis, typically gender dysphoria during those years. In other words, about one in every 65 adolescent girls in Oregon is a potential candidate for medical sex reassignment. Also of note, the median age of diagnosis in the study was 14 for both boys and girls. That's the median age. So there were kids under that as well. And the median time from diagnosis to medical intervention was just under 10 months. Just under 10 months. So in a period of 10 months, you've got a kid who thinks they might be a girl or a boy or whatever it is, then all of a sudden, medicalize them. Medicalize them. And some of the stuff they do to these kids, they'll have to be medicalized their entire lives over it. We've talked to detransitioners who they still have to take, you know, small doses of these hormones because they couldn't just cut them off. Destroys them for life medically. makes them a slave. And these leftists, don't they hate Big Pharma? I thought they hated Big Pharma. And then COVID came along. They're like, Big Pharma. Oh my God, Big Pharma. I love you so much. I'll do anything you say. And then with the gender stuff, oh yes, let's get these kids started on Big Pharma early. Let's make sure they need Big Pharma their entire lives to stay alive. Outrageous. City Journal goes on to say, to put these figures into context, when the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition, was published in 2013, it reported a diagnostic prevalence of gender dysphoria among adults as 0.002% to 0.003% for females, a little higher than that for males. It says, even if we assume that gender dysphoria is a single clinical entity, this means that diagnosed teen girls and boys in contemporary Oregon thus represent a rise of, respectively, more than 530 times the prevalence of pre-2013 figures. So if you compare pre-2013 to this 2016 to present, in Oregon, these girls are 500 times more likely to get a transgender dysphoria diagnosis than pre-2013, and boys are 30 times more likely to get a gender dysphoria diagnosis. And we don't think that's social contagion. What is it, just something in the water? And people will say, well, now it's more society accepts it more. So that's why now all these kids are coming out. No, a 10-year-old doesn't all of a sudden come out as, oh, they just have been indoctrinated. That's all it is. They're being indoctrinated. I know that. You know that. Nicole knows that. Sane people know that. Mentally disturbed people, for their own sick purposes, pretend not to know that. Let's just keep going on this wild ride. Breaking news in women's tennis. The WTA is now going to require genetic sex testing for all of its players. And this is great news, obviously, recognizing. I mean, it was Serena Williams. Venus or Serena? Which one's better? Serena, right? No. Serena's the better one, isn't she? Wasn't it Serena who was on the news being like, yeah, I don't want to play tennis against the boys. I would lose to like the 1,000th ranked male player. It says, starting this month, the WTA is taking the unprecedented step of requiring all of its players to undergo genetic testing to weed out any women who may have a specific genetic marker that suggests traces of male biology. This, as far as my research has shown, this is a guy who writes only about tennis, will make the WTA the first independent professional women's sports league or tour to mandate such genetic screening for all of its athletes. And you know what? Stupid that they've got to do it, but these are the times that we're living in. I mean, you had that boxer who, like, claimed till the end of time that he wasn't a man, and they had to go in and do genetic testing. When our eyes was like, yeah, that's a dude. It's just really not that hard to figure it out. I'm sure somebody in the comments is telling me whether it was Venus.
Serena.
Serena, yeah. Venus is like, has never been as good as Serena, right? Although Serena's all skinny now on the GLP-1s.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, but are you going to be as powerful? Because, I mean, she was never fat. She was thick and like a brick you-know-what house.
Well, I'm sure it just got rid of some of that, like, whatever she did have. And she's been training to have even more muscle, I'm sure. Because she doesn't look a lot
smaller. No, she doesn't look like one of those Ozempic faces that are, like, caved in. Like, she looks like she's been working out and stuff still. But she's definitely dropped some LBs. But still would lose against a guy, obviously. So that's good for tennis because, you know, just trust Serena. She doesn't think that boys should play against, men should play against women. They probably shouldn't. She would know. All right, before we get to comments, let me get to our subscriber show poll. I maybe should have given you a third option in this, but I was racking my brain with how do I word this? Because I struggle with this sometimes. So if an illegal alien is convicted of a crime, do you want them just deported or do you want to have to pay as a taxpayer for them to serve their time in prison? And only to, like, in a sanctuary state, not be sure if the prison will hand them over to ICE and then they're back in the community. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, Nicole, prison or just deport them?
Gosh, I guess it depends on how bad it is. Because if it's murder, then I mean, I hope they're in prison the rest of their lives, right? And I know that we have to pay for that, but I don't want them coming back. And if they can do that to somebody. If we're telling the countries, here's your criminal from America that we're giving back to you, then hopefully they serve some sort of punishment over there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a really tough decision.
It is.
I don't know.
Because that money factor and also the factor of they might release them without
right.
telling ICE. I tend to agree with you that the severity of the crime does matter because for that reason, like if, you know, the next election, we've got another open border Biden situation, that person's just coming back in.
Right.
And so then they've had no punishment really for the crime that they committed. But 68% of you say deport them. Just deport them. Vicky said, send them to the prison in El Salvador first. Yes. Papa Woody says, depending on the severity of the crime, being here illegally, deport, murder, rape, fraud, prison. And the state should have some sort of code for, like, deport them. Again, if we were in a sane place, this wouldn't be a factor. Because in a state like Florida, like, I would say, oh, yeah, send them to prison. And then they're going to deport them immediately. Right. But that's not the issue that we're dealing with. Teresa said, why would we pay to put them in prison? They've already cost us enough. Send them back. Jay Smith, I picked prison because so many that are simply deported, like sexual predators, come right back in. We just saw a 7-time felon back in, you know, especially if it's a crime with a victim, because that victim deserves some sort of justice, right? And if you're going to release them and then the person comes back, like this guy from India. What's to say he's not going to come back and hurt that same woman again? Like, she deserves to know that for this set period of time, she is protected from him.
Right.
But the state has to do its job and protect her from him by telling ICE, here's his release date. Come and get him. We'll hold him until you get there. Mm-hmm. Not controversial. That's what it means to, like, care about victims and to defend women. But you know what the state will do? They will choose this illegal alien over that woman. The press will choose that illegal alien over this woman. How can anyone align themselves with that ideology? That is sick stuff.
I also think it's a little bit scary because you don't know, like, you don't want to give them this, like, it's okay to commit a crime because you'll just be deported. Right. I'll just have to go back. I won't have any punishment for it.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's a tough decision, but I do think let's give them all the transgender surgery and put them in their own little prison.
Wait, then
the ones that are accused of sex crimes.
I say if they come from a Muslim country, mandated gender transition, send the guy back with big old boobs straight back to Iran, and then he'll get the death penalty because that's what they do in those countries. God, we're on a bender today. All right, shall we do comments from the live stream while we're here on the illegal arrested in the torture case? Lancelot says, so my tax dollars are being given to this? Well, your tax dollars are being given to a lot. I wonder if that comment was about something else. Maybe not. But yes, your tax dollars will go to prosecuting him, to holding him in the jail while he's awaiting trial. And then your tax dollars will go to incarcerating him.
If it's about Eleanor, that, yes, that too.
Yeah. Yep.
So from 5K, does ICE not have the power to pull him out of jail? If not, they should be able to.
And I don't believe so. Maybe they could get some sort of warrant from a judge to be able to do that. We can ask, but I don't believe if they're being held on a state charge.
That's why they have to stand outside and wait for them because they know they won't be told or
whatever.
And then,
you know, play catch. Mm-hmm. It's just like so crazy. Little Miss J, this poor woman and her family, this will be a trauma she will have for a lifetime. Yeah, and like I said, they
that was
showed
in the 80s.
No, oh, wait, I'm talking about
Sorry.
Yeah, just absolutely horrific. And they showed pictures of the torture and it was awful. I mean, she was living in hell and our state protects him. Because he's an illegal alien.
I mean, allowed it. They allowed it.
They allowed it. It's wild. All right. On the details of the newly released Predator.
From John Thomas, inmates are given phones now. Allegedly, the phones are restricted to certain sites, but it's ridiculously easy to hack.
Yeah, well, I know, like, iPads
was a thing. This one
was
considered contraband.
Yeah, this was a contraband phone. He got in trouble for it. And obviously, he had allegedly child sex material on there.
And we know that it wasn't given to the prosecutor. I'm still waiting for State Patrol to...
Because it's in the hands of the state patrol. Yeah.
Well,
do you know that
we don't really know that? I've been told is that they've received my request for information. Mm. So I don't know what they were told. So
yeah, because why would you not? If you found him with a phone in prison, with depictions of child porn, why would he not be charged with that?
Some of the reasons that I was given is they can't verify that it was his phone or that it was him who got the phone, or so I've been told that there are contraband chain of custody issues.
But also, I mean, on a lot of
that's ridiculous.
He was wearing a shirt telling gang members, you know, if you kill this guard, I'll give you $5,000. That's solicitation of murder. Why was he not charged with solicitation of murder? There's a we're doing a follow up because that is outright. That is solicitation of murder. If I out in public said, I'll give you $5,000 if you kill XYZ. That's and I give you the money as I would go to prison for solicitation of capital murder.
There are multiple documented assault things. Right. Why couldn't they tack on years?
Strange.
Come on.
I have a lot of questions. A lot of questions. This guy should not be in Enumclaw. Mm-hmm. The community, and I know the people of Enumclaw, they're pissed. And they are not going to take this lightly. All right.
Also
Steve.
Also the virtual meeting, by the way.
Virtual meeting. Cowards.
Sheriff's
office. Oh, we
got to
do it virtually.
Come on now.
No, you don't. Steve Simino, whoever signed off on his release should have this guy as a neighbor. Yep. You decided? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. He can come live next to you. 100%. All right. You want to do a Greg Olakis?
Yes. A deviant sexual predator like this will never change. Science has proven that. And I thought Democrats trust science.
No, it depends. It depends. Weiss Castle says, why didn't the feds arrest him for child pornography? So yeah, there's some issues there. We'll see what the state patrol says. Because if a crime happens in prison, typically that would go to the state patrol. Depends what it is. But in this case, child exploitation. So, all right. State Supreme Court cases. Haynes.
Me? I'm surprised we actually get to vote for these Supreme Court judges.
So they don't just that Bob well, doesn't just say, here's your crown.
Well, I think that's why he does place the ones he places. And then he makes it this big show of who's getting the spot. So he has been very he's putting these names in people's heads. Mm-hmm. So you recognize the name on ballots. Yeah. That's why I mean, he's being very out about who he chooses for these positions, because he wants you to think of their name when you think of this role.
Right. So we just need to make sure that there's a lot of information out there about who the sane choices are. And again, I can't promise you even the recommendations I gave. I can't promise you that guy or that girl will specifically absolutely strike down the income tax, because I don't know. Because if they're out there telling them, and I have a high suspicion that the ones that Bob Ferguson appointed, he knows because they've probably told him. That's my guess. I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but it's my show. I have free speech. I can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the case. All right. On Eleanor still missing, Crafty Grandma Crispy says public records requests can't unearth that info. Not this kind of. No, it would be information related to a minor. No. And we wouldn't even know where to look, really. You know, what agency, what taxpayer funded, you know, exterior nonprofit has she had contact with? What name is she using? Is she using Elliot? Is she using a different name? What jurisdiction is she in? We just don't know.
The hint that has been given is that there was something closed, like her mom said, there was some sort of case or some file closed, and they believe that Eleanor would have had to okay that file being closed. So that's why we believe they have some contact with her.
Well,
because
there's
something closed. Something closed.
Right. I mean, all of the entities that are taxpayer funded that she had contact with leading up to her disappearance, you're telling me then she disappeared and she cut off contact from all of them? Of course not. She's still wound throughout the system. That's the point of this law, is to get them reliant on government, being basically the guardian is the government. And oh my gosh, now you're ours. You think they're going to let her go? No. Good grief. All right. Let's see here. A couple super chats. Lancelot Dufresne says $20 super chat. No comment. Just a super chat. Thank you.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
For Joe Dack, I guess. Have you heard about the initiative that's making it into the ballots in Oregon that makes it illegal to collect eggs from chickens and butcher your own animals? I know the hunting one did not make it to the ballot, but I had not heard about
the eggs. Don't liberals love, like, isn't that supposed to be... Oh, farm fresh eggs. Like, oh, you're doing your own eggs. The chickens lay the eggs. Why couldn't you take them and eat them? What do you want them to do? They're not going to hatch.
Well, you typically don't eat the chicken. Well, I don't. There's certain chickens you eat and certain chickens that lay eggs. And I don't understand. But you know what? They don't know. That's why. They don't know the actual how a farm works, how this kind of harvesting works. They don't know.
No. Denise says, I'm in Bend, Oregon. The clerk at Walgreens saw my undivided tote and said, undivided. I listen to Brandy. Oh, that's great. We love to hear that. And you probably heard our interview on Sundays with Subscribers with Christine Drazen, who is now the front runner to be the next governor of Oregon, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. I'll read James's $100 super chat. Holy smokes. Why is my immediate reaction, do I have to take my shirt off for that? I'm just kidding. Donations to celebrate my birthday on Friday when you don't have a show. Thank you for signing my tote. I used it for work, or I've been using it for work since. Also, as someone who has had to pass the citizenship test, thank you for asking the golfers questions. Please, can Nicole wish me a happy birthday?
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. And we're sorry we didn't have a show on your birthday. James. Also, yeah. Let me get this out of the way because I have absolutely failed you. A couple questions about when we're having our next Q&A. I'll set it right now. 8 p.m. on Tuesday. 8 p.m. on Tuesday, which is...
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes. Tuesday. Right. 8 p.m. Tuesday. So I'll put up a little thing that'll... remind you of it. And then, as you know, an hour before our live Q&A for subscribers, I'll put out a link. So get your best questions ready. 8 p.m. tomorrow, we'll do a live Q&A. And I love to hear from all of you. All right, we get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you are thinking about leaving the state, or you're just, you know, I mean, home prices are going down, so maybe it's finally time to sell the house you're in and get the home of your dreams. Either way, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes was telling us, look, we can still get the same results that home buyers and home sellers were getting a couple years ago, but you might just have to have a better strategy going in. And Wes can help you with that. He's going to start with a free market analysis. He's going to sit you down, be like, look, this is what the market's doing in your area. You know, listings are up. Here's what we can expect. Time on the market, all those things. But, you know, the goal is always the same, get you the most possible value out of your home. And so they have a strategy to do that. Their Listing Boost concierge service. They're going to come in, make only the necessary cosmetic upgrades if there are any to be made. He can even arrange it so you don't have to pay for it till closing, which takes that financial pressure off of you. And then the staging and the marketing, those are so key in a market like this when there are just so many listings up. Yours has to stand out. Wes and his team are better at that than anyone else. Don't take my word for it. Go to his website, peruse their listings and the homes that they've sold, and you will see the way that they stage their listings is just so unique. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So you know that former Washington Governor Christine Gregoire had come out a couple months ago and criticized Democrats in Washington state. Oddly, she also criticized like Governor Bob Ferguson and some of his fiscal decisions, even though she endorsed him for governor, which bothers me a little bit. But she basically said, look, they don't know how to budget. The budget has ballooned. They're passing all these taxes. And she comes from, you know, a different era of Democrats. Like some of this nonsense stuff, that's just not her vibe. And she has become very outspoken about the poor economic decisions being made in the state. And now she is not alone in the realm of former governors. Also a Democrat, former Governor Gary Locke, speaking out.
There's no budget discipline. They're taking one-time money and creating permanent programs without any thought as to how are they going to sustain that program when that one-time money goes away. Or they're borrowing money from various accounts and not knowing how they're going to pay that back, and then how they're going to sustain that program that they borrowed the money for if and when they return that money back to the original fund. So I think spending is out of control in Olympia. They need much more discipline. They need to set priorities. And when they say that they're going to create a program and they ask the voters to approve of that particular program, they need to make sure that they don't take that money a few years later and spend it on something else, because then the voters lose faith, whether it's with their city government, county government, or state government. Well, already they've committed that source of money to various programs, but they're already facing a budget deficit 2 years from now. So what's going on? They say that this was necessary to balance the budget, but even with that money, they're facing a deficit. And will they even be able to use that money for the programs that they've promised the voters?
Yeah, I mean, we've got children in charge of the state. They have nothing about the economy, nothing about economics, nothing about budgeting, nothing. So now we have not one, but two former Democratic governors of Washington state who are saying we're in a serious situation. The Democrats in charge of the state don't know how to spend money. They don't know how to budget. All they know how to do is pass new taxes. So these are two very good reasons. You don't have to listen to me. All crazy right-wing Brandy's at it again. Very opposed to taxes. No, listen to Christine Gregoire and Locke, two former governors of our state, both highly respected, who say we can't continue to do this. So very good reason to do what in November? Vote yes to repeal the state income tax and send a message to Democrats in Olympia that they can't keep taxing their way out of their spending problem. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We do have a slight bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers. If you'd like to support our show for just $5 a month, you can do that. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. It's $5 a month. We've never raised the price. I think it's a pretty good deal to support independent journalism. And just, you know, have a good time. I feel like we have a good time on the show. No? No, Nicole?
Absolutely.
Yeah, good time. Depressing, yes. Mm-hmm. Good time also, yes. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. And don't forget, for subscribers, we're going to have a live Q&A Tuesday, 8 p.m. Pacific time. Be on the lookout on Patreon, Locals, and X for more information.